This is a Riches and Power short. The City Council of Minneapolis just passed an ordinance that would raise the minimum pay for Uber and Lyft drivers. In response, Uber and Lyft have announced plans to leave Minneapolis when the law comes into effect in May. I have the privilege of having a conversation with Dave Orrick of the Minnesota Star Tribune. He's a journalist who covers the Minneapolis City Hall. And we're going to dig a little bit into this issue and learn a little bit more about what's going on there in Minneapolis. Dave, thanks for joining. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Alex.
So from what I've read, the Minneapolis City Council, with a veto-proof majority, no less, just passed some pretty sweeping changes when it comes to rideshare. Could you just briefly walk us through what's going on there?
Sure. Yeah, the biggest change is they are raising a minimum amount of pay for drivers. The goal is to get drivers up to the equivalent of a minimum wage. Of course, Uber and Lyft drivers are not employees. They are independent contractors, so they are not covered by the city or the state or any minimum wage ordinance or statutes. The sticky thing here is the level that the Minneapolis City Council set for these minimum payments that must go to drivers. They set them per minute and per mile. Is a level that is too high for either Lyft or Uber. And the mayor of the city, Jacob Fry, said, look, I've been talking with these companies. They've promised me that they will leave town if we approve these. And so he vetoed that. And then his veto was overridden. And both companies said, well, when that ordinance goes into effect on May 1st, we will leave. Lyft has said it will leave Minneapolis, but continue service throughout the rest of the metro. And Uber has said they will leave the entire metro area. And we are, of course, the Twin Cities. Minneapolis is not the only city. There's also the state capital of St. Paul, just a few miles away.
A lot of things to unpack there. But the thing that most jumped out to me is it seems like city councils never totally agree on anything. And here you've got a veto-proof majority, so a super majority that passed this. Why do you think that happened?
Yeah, it's interesting because we just had an election in 2023 for all 13 city council seats. The old city council passed this same measure. It was actually a little bit expanded measure, but did not have a veto-proof majority. The same mayor vetoed it, and that override vote failed. But what happened is in the last election, as is in a number of American cities, there has been a pull to the left. This is a Democratic-dominated town, but it is a question of how far left you are going to go. And the council shifted a little bit further to the left when two council members who were sort of in the center left did not seek re-election. And so as a result, you have a different political makeup and a different ideology. And even though in some ways this is not that ideological, everyone has ride shares and all Democrats support higher minimum wages, the question of how much you're going to listen to multinational, multi-billion dollar corporations like Uber and Lyft, I think plays into it a little bit. The council majority right now feels that it has a mandate to really stick up for what it sees as anything workers' rights related and err on the side of workers. And that is basically what they've done here. Many of them believed, and a few still maintain now, that Uber and Lyft are essentially bluffing, that they won't really leave. And that appears to be part of their calculus that looks like it's, we'll see, but it really looks like the companies are leaving. I mean, they recently announced through a partnership with Hertz Rent-A-Car, for example, that Uber and Lyft drivers who rent their vehicles through this financing agreement, they have to turn in those vehicles before May 1st, which is another interesting ancillary effect of something like this. I mean, the shockwaves of this are pretty great right now, and we haven't even reached the May 1st effective date.
So it doesn't seem like it's just saber rattling from Uber and Lyft.
It does not. Like I say, they are now, these cars are getting called in. And that means for many of these drivers, some of them that I've spoken with, they do not have another vehicle. So it's not like they're going to be able to, you know, go ahead and be giving rides even until May 1st once they lose their vehicle. Uber has begun to shut down its only sort of office space here, which is essentially HR type support, things like that for Uber drivers where they can go. Again, they could ramp it up pretty quickly if they wanted to, but it looks like they're for real on this.
I want to come back to the voting and the city council makeup because there's something interesting there. But you've spoken with Uber and Lyft drivers, these rideshare drivers, who seem strangely absent in a lot of ways from this conversation because you've got advocates on one side, the city council, the mayor on the opposing side. But I'm curious, when you've spoken with these rideshare drivers, what has been the tenor of the conversations? How are they looking at this change?
Sure. Well, to say they're absent is probably because I didn't explain all the background to begin with. This whole thing started when a well-organized group of Uber and Lyft drivers came to some of the city council members and the mayor's office and said, we're not getting paid enough. Okay, this is a narrative that you're hearing across the country as Uber and Lyft have allowed less money to go to their drivers. Now, they say it's because insurance rates that they have to pay have gone up. There is data to support that. There is also data to support the idea that they're doing it to make more of a profit for themselves. These companies only recently began reporting profits, even though they've been with us for over a decade. Like a lot of tech startups, they were burning cash for a long time. Now they are making profits. So a group of well-organized drivers, largely based in the East African immigrant community here in the Twin Cities, and we have a substantial immigrant community, started lobbying their city council members and city hall and state lawmakers to raise the floor on what they were being paid. And that group largely carried the narrative of the drivers for a long time. And these guys are very transparent. They show us their phones. They show us their apps a lot. Some of them have showed us their mechanics bills, their insurance bills, and have said, look, this is what I actually make from this ride. These are my expenses. I can't make a living off this. However, since the ordinance started really gaining traction, and really since the veto was overridden, we have started hearing from a ton of other drivers who were really pretty subdued previously, who are saying, look, I'm happy with the money I make with Uber and Lyft. And I don't understand why these guys can't make more money. It might be the routes they're choosing. It might be the hours they're choosing. There are 10,000 registered Uber drivers in the in the state of Minnesota, 7,000 active regularly. It is not a monolithic group. I hear from people in the suburbs who say one thing, from people in the city who say another. And there's no doubt that Uber and Lyft are trying to marshal some of the drivers who are kind of on their side in this matter and get them out there. But I have also heard independently, and my colleagues have spoken with a number of drivers independently who are not sort of affiliated in that way. I've spoken with many drivers who said, we need some kind of minimum pay, but there's probably a middle ground. And it didn't have to be this much. And we probably could have tried better to reach some minimum pay that Uber and Lyft wouldn't be fleeing town. And I should note that that is still possible. Before May 1st, there are a couple of Minneapolis City Council meetings, and the City Council has said, the majority has said, they are open to possibly tweaking this ordinance to maybe lowering the minimums. Lyft has laid down a marker as to a level that they would accept, but it is basically half or not quite a little more than half of what the current ordinance says. So there is a long way to go to see if any compromise can be reached, but it is possible.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, the current proposal essentially gets them fairly close to $16 an hour. Is that right?
Well, it depends how you calculate it, and there's a lot of debates around that, but it looks like it will get them quite a bit more than that. The thing is, it's really hard to figure out, without getting lost in the numbers, and I have spreadsheets of numbers, it is really hard to figure out what a fair wage is for something that involves dynamic pricing. I mean, that is their surge pricing, right? Uber and Lyft do not charge you and I the same price for the same ride. It depends on the time of day, the time of year, what the weather's like, what the traffic is like, what the demand is like.
Does the difficulty come from the fact that there's a sense that the drivers should be sharing in that surge. And so they should be earning more in busy times. And I would assume from the company's perspective, they want to hold drivers' wages more flat, regardless of the surge.
Yeah. I mean, look, the company, ideally, both companies, they don't want drivers to have any control over. They don't want any restrictions on them. That's the way they operated for years. That's how they became profitable. But they have realized that in some areas, generally progressive controlled major cities, they're going to have to compromise. They're going to have to allow for things. There's a standard out in the state of Washington, and that sort of affects Seattle. And then New York City has a standard that was via court settlement. There's actually a wage theft court settlement that the attorney general came after Uber and Lyft for. So they are willing to accept a floor, but it's a question of how are you going to calculate this? Like, is it based on averages, for example, or is it based on the driver who only drives one day a week? And what if that driver drives at a time when it's not peak and when the fares are relatively low? Are you going to set up your ordinance so that even that person makes the equivalent of minimum wage? The progressives in Minneapolis say yes, that they really don't want to see any drivers or very few drivers who are driving at some level ever fall below the equivalent of a minimum wage. After all, that is a minimum wage. That's how it works for regular hourly workers. But in this case, if you do that, you are probably going to set up a wage schedule that means the hustlers out there are earning, you know, $50 to $60 an hour. And the companies would say, that's crazy.
What do you think the advocates for this law would say to people who said, well, look, this is a free market. No one's putting a gun to these drivers' heads. They're willingly opening up the driver app and driving for Uber or Lyft. This is a free market. Let wages fall where they will.
Yeah, that is an argument that has been made. The majority on this city council and pretty much a supermajority does have a response to that. And that's that it was a Faustian bargain. These companies came into town without permission. They disrupted the taxi industry. At the time, it seemed all well and good. And the drivers were okay with it. They had flexibility. Many were making good money. But then, because the companies had free rein, they began exploiting the drivers and cutting their wages until they became profitable. And the fact that only recently have they become profitable, so this argument goes, is evidence that their plan moving forward is for a model that exploits the drivers, because that's the only way they can guarantee profitability. They hooked everyone, including the drivers, onto this app-based system with substandard fare, sub-market fares, and above-market wages, essentially. And now everyone's hooked on it, including the drivers who have spent money on their own vehicles. They've invested in themselves as sort of independent business owners. And that's, I think, one of the tricky things. There's nowhere, many of these drivers used to drive cabs, and it's not clear that they can go back to the taxi market. That may be where some of them end up going. I mean, in 5 years from now, sure, they could find other jobs. But in the meantime, what could they do in the next 6 months? Because for some of these drivers, if they're out of work, this is the only work that they have right now.
Cut to middle of May, Uber and perhaps Lyft as well are out of Minneapolis. They're no longer operating there. Is there some other rideshare provider that's going to step into that void?
Yeah, that's an open question. There are a lot of companies that have said we want to step into the void. Last I checked, one has actually applied for a license. Minneapolis does license them. Uber and Lyft are the only two license holders now. One has actually applied. Several others have said they're going to apply. And one of the more interesting things is a bunch of the drivers have gotten together and said, we want to start a driver-owned rideshare company. This is modeled after one called the Drivers Cooperative in New York City. It is much smaller than Uber and Lyft and really is a niche market for people who have trouble with mobility, wheelchair users in New York. But that is an interesting one because it doesn't rely on profits at all. The profits could go back into the drivers themselves, improving their vehicles, whatever. The problem is the barriers to entry are still large. The Minnesota state law requires some serious insurance payments to liability coverage for these drivers. And so it remains to be seen whether mid-May we will have anywhere close to the capacity. I would predict we would have a couple of these companies up and running, but whether they have enough drivers actually operating, especially since a number of these drivers seem to be on the verge of losing their vehicles, remains to be seen.
And I wonder what people will do if you have to get to the airport and cabs don't exist like they used to, and Uber and Lyft are gone. Is there a sense of, is everybody going to be walking to the airport? What are we going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you just asked is are among the questions everyone in the Twin Cities has been asking, which is what the heck are we going to do? And we've run like a story every other day saying tourism officials are panicked, saying what the heck are we going to do for conventioneers who come into town? The airport, the officials at the airport are very worried. What the heck are we going to do? We don't have the taxi capacity right now. Public transit is only goes so far. Many in the disability community, less so for wheelchair users, but many people with mental disabilities or people who are blind and other visual impairments, they've come to rely on Uber and Lyft. The public defender in Hennepin County, which is where Minneapolis is, just sent a letter yesterday to the city council saying, you know, we've relied since 2018 on Uber and Lyft to get low income and really challenged defendants, like people with serious mental illnesses, people who are drug addicts, to get them to their court dates so that they do not wind up getting incarcerated on a bench warrant. We've been using this to get them to court, and it's been really effective. What the heck are we going to do? So I don't have answers. Nobody has answers. The mayor has been trying to meet with officials and figure things out, but it's going to test the system if they in fact do leave May 1st.
Is your sense on this that this is a case of a well-organized and loud lobbying group, essentially advocacy group, that is in opposition to, at the driver level, perhaps a large silent majority or a majority who just aren't lobbying the city council, and or also a big rider base that similarly isn't showing up to the city council? Is this that kind of scenario?
I think it could be exactly as you explained it. We don't know. We haven't attempted to poll all the drivers. I don't believe Uber and Lyft have quite attempted to poll them internally on this exact matter, but it is definitely possible. There's no question that the narrative that you would have seen, as I saw, within the hall, the chambers of the city council, was not reflective of the entire region's collective thoughts on it. It was slanted one way. But whether it's truly a minority is a little unclear. I think that, you know, knowing Minnesota and Minneapolis the way I know it, I think that there would be widespread support for improving the wages of drivers. But at the expense of the rideshare companies, that's where it becomes a lot less clear. And there are definitely people that are speaking loudly now saying, Minneapolis City Council, you guys screwed up. And they range from Republicans outside the Twin Cities and in the outer suburbs to the mayor himself, who is a Democrat, and Governor Tim Walz, who is a Democrat, who also is scrambling with other Democratic lawmakers who control the legislature, trying to see if they can do something at the state level that could keep these companies here. It is largely a fight within the left amongst itself to see if they can't strike a balance. But I think you're right. Like a lot of progressive initiatives, if they actually make it into law or statute or ordinance, sometimes we see, oh, there was a quiet constituency that wasn't very loud that's actually not comfortable with this. And it's sometimes hard to tell how it breaks out, but I've seen it. We've seen it in rent control here in the Twin Cities. Also, we've seen it on a lot of these other issues. It's hard to put a bead on it.
Yeah, this definitely has echoes of some of the rent control movement I've seen in Minneapolis. But this is a conversation I've really enjoyed with Dave Orrick of the Minnesota Star Tribune, a journalist. Dave, my final question here, and you've seen a lot. You've covered City Hall for a long time, so the answer here may be, I've seen it all, nothing surprises me anymore, but I'm curious just looking forward, do you have any takeaways here, any ways that this particular narrative has or will change the lens with which you view things going on at City Hall going forward?
Well, within this City Hall, yeah, it's just interesting. If you end up in a situation where we do, where you have a city council that believes in a political ideology that is not in agreement with the mayor, and this can happen in a state legislature and a governor, but in this case, like I say, it's the left versus the left, and something like this happens, can they go forward from this and figure out, okay, maybe next time we can actually fight a little bit less and talk a little bit more? Because I think, and I could be wrong, but I think there is a number out there that would satisfy even the drivers who were very loud and unsatisfied. And some of them have told me that this particular number that the Minneapolis City Council has set was great, but they probably would have been okay with a lower number. I think that there was probably a middle ground there. And it never happened because everybody got tied up in sort of yelling, in rallying causes, in owning each other on Twitter. And you get personality clashes and stuff like that. And I just think it behooves everyone in major American cities, certainly, to ask their leaders and for those leaders to figure out, are there ways we can have these arguments and maybe settle them before we actually blow the whole thing up? And again, mid-May, if in fact both rideshare companies have left, and if it is really as problematic as many people fear, I think that will be a question that maybe others around the country will look at Minneapolis and say, well, okay, even the side that won, it was a little too ugly.
Mm-hmm. We killed the golden goose here.
Maybe. I mean, we'll see.
Well, Dave Orrick, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. For everybody looking to learn more about this, visit startribune.com.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
This has been a production of Riches and Power, hosted by Alex Dubay, edited by Sean Dooley. Copyright 2023 by Wesley Capital, LLC.